Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are halfway through the week. Happy Wednesday to everybody. Welcome into ABQ Connect. Congressman Steve Pierce, chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, on the phone with us this afternoon. Welcome, Congressman, into ABQ Connect.
Hey, it's good being with you. I hope you and all your listeners are safe, you're healthy, and that you're surviving this kind of shutdown okay.
Well, I know you are working very hard to not only keep us safe, but to help people get back to work in the state. And we're going to talk to you about national things and some local things. So let's go out of the gate and get started. About 10 days ago or so, or less than 10 days, you had a victory in the New Mexico Supreme Court regarding the issue of mail-in ballots. Tell us about that.
Well, we did. The Democrats were favoring a system that would mail a ballot to every single voter, even if they moved out of state and they didn't report that. People who pass away sometimes don't get purged off the rolls, and they would get ballots. And so that was the kind of petition they made to the Supreme Court. We countered with a suit of intervention that said, no, the law doesn't allow that. We should not be operating outside the law. We should be sending absentee ballots to people if they request them. And so it's absentee mail-in versus vote by mail, two different, complete different systems, the VBM system being pushed by George Soros nationwide. And so the Supreme Court made a decision, heard the arguments, and decided that the Republican Party was the one that was closest to the law. And they also stated that that the Supreme Court cannot make law. They can only interpret law, which was a very, very conservative position. Now, the Supreme Court is five people, one Republican, four Democrats, and yet it was a unanimous decision, Democrats joining the Republicans saying that they cannot make law, that the Democrat suggestion to do the VBM system where everybody got a ballot was not legal. And so they sided with us. It was just, you know, I didn't feel a sense of triumph or anything, but I did feel reassured that the system was working the way that it's supposed to. And so that kind of refreshes the human spirit when your government does what it's supposed to do, makes a decision that is legal and in keeping with the laws on the books. So that's how I felt.
Well, Congressman, you're obviously the chairman of the Republican Party, but one of the things I appreciate about you is that you've shared a lot of personal stories and interactions and actual activities that you've had with people on both sides of the aisle, and how our situation today really requires that Democrats and Republicans work together. So I'm going to skip down my list a little bit, and this is kind of a almost facetious or tongue-in-cheek question, but how are Democrats that are in business for themselves being affected by the shutdown? Is it the same as Republicans?
Absolutely. You know, this is when the government said that we're going to protect people and everybody needs to stay home and we're going to shut down the non-essential businesses. What they did was shut down the main street businesses. They still left the big box stores open, those out-of-state giants, Walmart, Lowe's, PetSmart, whatever they are. And I don't mind them being open, but they should have left the small businesses open too, because small business is the backbone of the New Mexico economy. We probably have just as many or more Democrat business owners as we do Republican. And so everyone is affected. You know, over 50% of the small businesses in New Mexico are female. Over 25% are Hispanic. And so we're hurting the very groups that we say we're trying to help. And so that's the reason that we've been kind of public, with our difference between the governor on this issue. It's not that she's got business open. It's that she's got the big businesses favored over the small businesses. So yes, Democrat businesses are being punished bad. Some are going to close up and never reopen. I'm hearing them talk.
Well, I want to acknowledge up front that maybe I've missed something, but to me, I'm seeing nationally and within our state, the Republican Party is putting out thoughtful plans about how we can get back to work. What are you encouraging our governor to do? Because I'm not seeing anything from the Democrat Party.
Well, my first point is, let's be fair across the board. I think that small business could social distance even better than the big box stores. I mean, if you've been in one of the big box stores, it's the shopping has become a full contact sport. the aisles are crowded. People are bouncing into you. And some are trying to keep their distance, but most of them are just hustling around. I happened to be there on the Saturday before Easter Sunday, and so people were taking those essential teddy bears out, and mm-hmm. Easter bunnies, and all that stuff, and it was just it was unusual. But then spring is a time where we plant and we grow and we fertilize, and you can't go to your local nursery, maybe where you've been going for decades, but you can buy the same thing over at at Lowe's or someplace, mm-hmm. Home Depot, or whatever, mm-hmm. and that's just not right. It's not fair, and it's going to hurt New Mexico a lot. And so we're recommending first that she just equalize the rules, but then let's take a look at the counties that don't have any exposure at all. There's, I think, the last time I checked, there were six or so counties that did not have even one case, and they should be the small businesses there should definitely be allowed to open. In places that have infections, the more serious the infection, the more restrictions you'd see. Hobbs has got two active cases, I think, the last time I checked, so it might be different than Albuquerque. But let's start the state back to work, because this is a catastrophe that's happening for New Mexico. If you add the oil and gas price collapse, and then you add the collapse of tourism, and then you have what's going on with our small businesses, you have a tremendous budget problem developing for the state. So let's minimize it as much as we can.
Yes. Congressman, I don't know if I can verbalize this correctly, because I'm not sure I understand what the process is. But here you've said that Democrat business people, Republican business people, they're all faced with the same budget issues, trying to take care of the families. All of this thing is very common to all of us. Who has to make the decisions about how we get back to work? Can we work together? Can the Republicans call the Democrats and have a Zoom meeting and come up with some plans and do this safely and quickly?
Well, that's where it comes down to the legislative body. If anybody discusses with the governor, she could just by a stroke of a pen reverse it in any fashion she wanted to. She's the one who shut it down, and she could open up piecemeal. She could open it up all the way across, and those discussions have actually been going on. Jim Townsend is the minority leader in the legislature, and he's been on long conference calls with the governor, and they basically, the governor and the Speaker of the House being the main spokesman, but I'm sure you have Peter mm-hmm. Wirth, who is the Democrat leader in the Senate, and they, I'm sure, are pretty much on the same page, and they're saying until we have no infection, we're not going to open up. Well, that could be months. I don't think New Mexico's economy can stand months of what it's been going through for the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Yes. Well, you know, I think everybody agrees. I mean, I'm watching some things happening nationally. You have a Democrat governor in Michigan, and she is so heavily criticized now for not getting things open because factory workers and all these people already have social distancing, or as much as you would find in any other operation that's going on. Yet these people are all out of work because they're deemed non-essential. And then, of course, we talked a week or so ago with Pastor Steve Smotherman with Legacy Church, and Pastor Smotherman was missing. I think he was there was a lot of miscommunication about why he sued the state of New Mexico. All he was really trying to do was establish the fact that, hey, there's abortion clinics open all throughout the state. They are fully staffed, and sure, they might be bringing in, you know, limited numbers of patients at a time, but all he was wanting to do is not have services at his church or anything else, but have the staff available so they could bring them in and produce the things that they needed to do online to encourage their congregation and others, people really throughout the world they're encouraging now. That's one silver lining to all of this, is a lot of the pastors that I've seen that have now put their services and everything online and promoting them, they're actually ministering to people all over the country. But we need people to be able to go to work, maintain all the safety regulations and social spacing, but It doesn't seem like there's any feedback, at least to the public, about the governor making any concessions on these ideas.
Yeah, and I was surprised that the courts decided against the pastor's lawsuit. I was very familiar with it, working up to about midnight on the Saturday before Easter Sunday. Of course, the governor put her executive order out on Saturday. Mm-hmm. If it was Friday, we could have gone to a federal court judge and had them intervene. But she put it out on a Saturday. Saturday night, we were trying to find a federal judge who would take a look at it. And his request for 40 people, I've been in his facility numerous times, consider him a friend. He's steady in preaching the gospel, and I appreciate that about him. 40 people in his facility, I mean, it's several football fields in the size of it, so 40 people, you could have 50 feet, not just 5 feet between people.
Right.
And when I contrast that to the 204 people that are allowed into the grocery store at any single time in Hobbs, or even more in the other big box stores, then you say, you know, this is the unfairness that really grates on people. Just treat us all the same, and you would get by with a lot less friction than what people are throwing up.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, a lot of us, I'm from Albuquerque. I have spent some time in southeast New Mexico. I've spent some times in Hobbs and Dora, and used to run a loop that used to go over to Carlsbad and up to Artesia and Roswell and Vaughan, and on the way back to Albuquerque. So I'm kind of familiar with a lot, especially of the small diners and things that are in those communities. And they've been just devastated by the fact that they can't open. And I can't remember, I remember stopping off in a diner in Hobbs. I can't remember the name of it, but I stopped by at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, and maybe two people in the diner. And we were already social distance, even though that wasn't even a requirement. So having all of that shut down, I can sure see how that's hurting people. I wanted to ask you one more question before the break, and you're going to be able to stay with us another segment down to 1:30. But I wanted to ask you what you think maybe the political motivations might be in, you know, keeping gun stores closed and shooting ranges and golf courses and those kinds of things.
Well, I can't speak to the exact stimulation that the governor is responding to, but I tell you that I've seen a pattern since the day she was inaugurated. She has 100% of the time, she has nationalized her agenda. That is that she has chosen to align with the national Democrats, not the Democrats in the state. When she put up the red flag laws, when they started talking about taking away people's guns, that doesn't represent your typical Democrat in New Mexico. It is a national view, but New Mexico Democrats a lot live in rural areas. They want and need firearms for sport or for hunting or for self-protection. And so I've been surprised that she continues to just nationalize her agenda like she is.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and Congressman, every time I talk to you, I get to know you a little bit about your personal life as well. We talked about flying planes right before we came on the air, and I want to come back and talk about your book, Just Fly the Plane, Stupid, and then we'll get back into some issues. We'll be right back with Congressman Steve Pierce right after these messages.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
Life can take an unexpected turn in your home or business by fire or flood. As a result, you may have mold problems. Let the experts put your mind at ease with a quick response from locally owned water extraction experts. They'll provide service within the hour, are available 24/7 for emergencies, and work with all insurance companies. Professional, certified, and friendly technicians are here to do the job right the first time. Call the experts now at 505-250-6500 or visit them online at waterextractionexperts.com.
Duke City Ready Mix, your local premier concrete and gravel producer, recently received national recognition by winning the Excellence in Concrete Quality Award from the National Ready Mix Association. We are dedicated to earning your trust by our consistent quality, service, and by being a good neighbor. serving the entire valley. Visit us at QualityMattersHere.com or call 877-5777. Duke City Ready Mix. Quality, service, community.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of old school gimmicks and games while shopping for a new car, then experience something new school at Power Ford. You'll get none of the hocus pocus, hokey pokey stuff the other guys try to pull. So here's the deal. We'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico, or we'll put $1,000 cash in your pocket. Come see why others rated us Best of the City and Ford Dealer of the Year. Find your ride at MyPowerFord.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
The chairman of the New Mexico Republican Party, Congressman Steve Pierce, on the phone with us this afternoon, and he's always gracious as normal to talk to us about us, to share a little bit about his personal life. Congressman, you wrote a book called Just Fly the Plane Stupid on the website, the GOP website. You are selling that book as kind of a fundraiser. And right before we came on the air, you were sharing with me that you took a little flight down in southeastern New Mexico, and I responded by telling you I have flown on a couple of small planes from Albuquerque to Hobbs, New Mexico at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the summer. My friend, that is astronaut training 101. It bounces you around like crazy, and I hope to never do that again.
It's the turbulence in the desert is extreme. You have the thermals that are always coming off the ground. Those are just currents of air that are moving up, and they'll bounce you around worse than you can stand it. I've flown my entire life. Started in my late teens, when I was a junior at New Mexico State University, the early 20s, and I will just tell you, it's something I had to get used to. But my wife and I were flying about 6 months ago into Albuquerque, and we hit one jolt there that was probably the most severe turbulence that I've experienced in my life. Mm. And so 40 to 50 years of flying, and both Cynthia and I were having to hold our hands above our head to keep from bouncing our heads on the ceiling of the airplane. It turned where the wing was pointed straight down instead of being level with the horizon. It was pretty tough. So I've experienced a couple of circumstances. I know turbulence very well.
Well, you must be an adrenaline person, because that would make my heart stop, and yet you seem to have gotten through that. And just by the very name of your book, you've trained yourself and have the experience to just fly the plane in some of those kind of serious situations. And it sounds like you really model your life after that.
I do. People always, well, who are you talking to about stupid? I said, well, that was always a statement I was making to myself, just fly the plane stupid, trying to keep myself focused. But I've found that as I stay focused and realize that there's a limited amount that we can do, just work with what you can at the moment that you got the problem, and you're going to be okay. Many times we make circumstances worse because we react incorrectly. We've trained a lot of hours in simulators in order to be able to maintain that focus and calmness during pretty severe crises in the aircraft. And the book talks about one or two of those circumstances. Cynthia always tells a story. Several years ago, we had a plane and the landing gear wouldn't come down and lock. I flew over the airport. And the guy come out and he looked up and said, no, your nose wheel's not down, your main gear are down. And so I came around, and he's a good friend also, and I knew what he was going to do, but we lined up on that Seminole airstrip, and I shut the engine off in the air to where it wouldn't tear up the engine when we hit, if the nose actually hit the ground. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they had gotten in their pickup and were speeding along. As I touched down, they were speeding along, and before the nose actually settled down, while it was still being held up by the lift of the wings, Lex jumped out and grabbed hold of the tail of the airplane. So I never even hit the nose on the ground. He had two of his helpers with him. They held the nose up. He came around, kicked the nose gear down, and then I could taxi in. But those are things that that once you deal with them in the air, you can deal with the problems in life very much way in a similar fashion. And I think that's where our faith comes in, not in our flying necessarily. It comes in there too, but our faith keeps us from panicking during times of crises. And I've told people through this whole COVID circumstance, just don't panic and we're going to be okay. And so I repeat that just fly the plane and we're going to be okay. So don't panic. Don't get alarmed, because we can do much more damage through panic than we can by kind of a reasoned approach. But I appreciate you bringing that up. We do have copies of the book available, and be happy to send them to people if they just check on that that webpage, GOP New Mexico.
Yeah, and there's a lot of information available. It's newmexico.gop, and there's all kinds of information about candidates and things that people, resources for voters and so forth. You even talk about, you know, getting registered to vote. And you've shared on this program before that about 50% of the faith community has registered to vote. But the paradox is that only half of them will actually vote in the elections. And we really, one of the purposes of having this program is we want to encourage people, voting is essential. And even though you get to vote once, it's a critical, countable, very influential vote, and you need to cast it. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And I tell people that one time we had a guy named David Barton visit our church. This is before I was in politics. And he asked how many of us were disappointed in the way the country was going. And I was right along with every other person in there. I raised my hand, and he said, and how many of you want to know why it's this way? And again, my hand flies up, and he answers, it's because people like you all, each one of you who raised your hand, don't run for office. Mm-hmm. And I thought the simplicity of that message was extraordinary. I began to pray about it, because at that point, my wife and I were in business. We were just covered up to our ears trying to manage it. We had 50 employees. But we began to pray for a 2 or 3 year period, and eventually got into politics because of that one statement, that people like you all sitting in the pews should run for office, and the rest of you should be out voting. And so that's when the nation changes, when the elected leaders have an understanding of law, have an understanding of the basis of law and the role of government. The role of government basically is to create justice and make sure that you punish the evildoers. Those are the two very strictly interpreted roles of government. Everything that flows into government outside those two concepts generally winds up in things that are not as productive for us as a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great segue into, you know, on previous shows you've shared with us that this year, because the elections for all 112 of our state representatives, both in the Senate and in the legislature, are going to be selected, and everybody's up, all the positions are up for grabs. You've said that this year there are more Republican candidates that have signed up to run than maybe any other previous year. Tell us about these candidates and how they might be different from what we've seen in the past.
Well, number one, there are 112 seats up. Typically, the Republicans will contest in about 60 to 70 of those. We won the majority in the House about 5 or 6 years ago, and we only had 65 of those seats that we were contesting. So this year, we are contesting 101 of the 112 races, and our candidates are very good. They're principled. We have a lot of people from the faith community stepping up. We've got a lot of Democrats who've walked away, the walk-away movement, in saying that their party left them and they are not going to be Democrats any longer. And it was not enough for them to register as Republicans. They're running as Republicans. And you know, it's a lot of them are in seats where it would have been far easier for them to run as Democrats, but they said, we can't in good faith and with a clear conscience do that. And so the fact that they gave up their seats and positions as Democrats and running as Republicans will tell you a lot about their character. We've got more diverse field than we've ever had. We've got Native American men and women. We've got Hispanic men and women. Of course, the Anglo men and women. It is really an exciting field. And if you get a chance to meet some of your candidates, I think you're going to be it'll give you a sense of confidence that things are turning around for New Mexico when you have this good quality of a candidate that is willing to get out and take the heat and run for office.
And I know there's information on your website. Again, that is newmexico.gop. There's information about these candidates on the website, correct?
It is. And we'll be communicating. You can sign up for our newsletter. We're communicating weekly. We'll be putting a different candidate up and highlighting them. But this election is important for New Mexico. I absolutely believe that Trump will win New Mexico, and I believe that the state is going to turn red. Because so many Democrats are saying, wait, the progressive part of the party has taken over, and they don't represent the average conservative Democrat in the state, not on life issues, not on the gun issue, not on tax issues. And so they're willing to vote for someone different, and all it takes is about 10 or 12% of the Democrats to vote different, and Republicans start winning in great numbers.
Congressman, what would you recommend our listeners do now? Is there any way they can help to communicate to the governor their wishes about getting back to work or their concerns? Or is she already inundated with so many emails and such that she wouldn't be able to respond? What can our listeners do to help?
Number one, they have a hotline to the governor's office to express your support or opposition. And it makes an impact when that hotline gets shut down. Sometimes the computer system gets shut down because so many people overload it, sending their comments in. And you can never get too many comments. They generally don't listen to all of them, but the number and the intensity of them typically get paid attention to. And so you can never have too many. That's number one. Number two, vote. And number two, encourage everyone you know to vote. That you mentioned before, 50% of the faith audience is registered and only 50% of them vote. If we voted in the same percent, just the evangelical churches alone, discounting any conservative Catholics or anything, but if the evangelical churches voted in the same proportion as the rest of the country, that is about 50, 52%, something like that, then we, the evangelicals, would control every single election across the country. And so the fact that the country is headed the direction it is a direct reflection that we a lot of times sit at home as conservative Christians. And so vote and urge the other people in your church to vote. Help register people in the church. A lot of them are not even registered. Discuss the issues. Learn those and discuss those. But be active. Not everyone is called to run for office. I didn't frankly think I was called for office. I was trying to talk everybody else at church into it, and when nobody would talk into it, I finally asked myself, what is my excuse? And at that point, then, like Isaiah, I said, Lord, I don't have the capability to get to Congress, but if you want me there, you solve it, and I'll go. And just that commitment was the basis of me running. Mm-hmm. And I was elected when no one thought that I would be elected, and served 14 years and got reelected with pretty large majorities. I always told people I didn't run on my faith, but I didn't run away from it. And people appreciate that. Even non-faith people will come in and say, hey, tell me a little bit about why you believe this and why you believe that. So non-faith people respect someone who will stand strong, and you don't have to shake it in their face. But I think that we a lot of times underplay our potential as Christians in our country, and we're called to be the salt and the light, and not always are we comfortable doing that.
Congressman Pierce, you're always a blessing to me and our audience. Thank you so much for your time today on ABQ Connect.
Yeah, I would have to keep, if I can, before we go.
Yes.
Go to that webpage, newmexico.gop. I put out an Easter message on Psalms 11. That, to me, for the last several years, has really been an important understanding. And that's where David is talking about when the foundations are destroyed. So take a look, because a lot of people think the foundations of their whole life is being destroyed right now. Mm. And I think you'll be surprised at the answer that David gives. But Psalms 11, take a look at that, newmexico.gop, my Easter message. Jim, always great talking to you.
Hey, thank you, Congressman. We appreciate you, and we hope to get you back on the air here in another couple weeks.
Be happy to do it, my friend. God bless you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. Healthy.